Hi. Holy crap, it's been a bit. Sorry for the delay of an episode, but I've been extremely busy with the end of the year wrap-up at school, as well as that escape room I told you about last time that we designed for our son for his birthday. Several people went through it. It was a success, so here we are. But I'm back and back on track. This summer I should have time to record a lot, including the Secret Spy Sisters episodes that I talked about that I'll upload to the website only. Remember, I'm not going to put that on any other podcasting thing, so you'll just have to go to the website to take a gander at it. I'm excited about them though because I think it's going to be fun. I like the idea of women spies at all, but definitely women spies. I also want to thank all of you listeners. Thank you for those that have been patient waiting, because again, it's been a bit. Gosh, I think it's been since like the 6th or something of May. So welcome. This is June 1st, 2021. We're starting out our summer with episode 27. But again, I want to thank you listeners. This podcast has, at the time of this recording, 1.6 thousand plays and an established audience of 45. That is so way awesome to me. Now, I know that, there's different ways that podcasters look at their podcast, but just the idea that people are listening at all to me is exciting. And at the time of this recording, it's been listened to by at least one person in each of these countries. And yeah, I'm going to list them because it's so exciting to me. USA, Australia, UK, Canada, Ireland, Germany, Slovenia, France, Puerto Rico, Russia, Thailand, Denmark, New Zealand, Spain, Netherlands, Finland, Israel, Sweden, India, Colombia, Mexico, Chile, United Arab Emirates, Latvia, Indonesia, Brazil, Ghana, Taiwan, Japan, Bahrain, Trinidad and Tobago, Italy, South Africa, Poland, and the Czech Republic. That is amazing to me. So if you're the one person that listened and then now you're back, thank you. I'd like some of those numbers to go up in all those other countries. But the top four, I'm sorry, top five are USA, Australia, UK, Canada, and Ireland. Thank you. You've been quite faithful, and I really truly appreciate that for sure. All right. So if you heard your country listed, but I haven't talked about a woman from there, please email me, tweet, Facebook, or go to the website and suggest somebody. All the episodes are there, as well as a page for suggestions and a page where I list all the women. You can see pictures of the women there and pictures of things around them, like what a guillotine looks like and all that kind of stuff. So please, visit the website. Now, on to episode 27. Before we talk about our woman for the day, I want to give a bit of background about the type of crime she conducted. Most of us had fallen for some sort of con in our life, whether you gave money to the Nigerian prince through emails, or you were shortchanged when you were a cashier at a convenience store, or, after a hailstorm in Texas, roofers come around, they get a deposit, and they never show back up because there's no regulation in Texas on that. Still, it's a con, right? So we're all kind of familiar with this type of crime, but when did this kind of start? It seems like it would have started like as early as crime started, right? But the official term for it didn't appear until the late 1840s. The definition of a con artist or confidence man or woman, that's what con stands for, is confidence, is a person who cheats or tricks others by persuading them to believe something that is not true. They attempt to defraud, rob, etc., by gaining the confidence of the victim. The first recorded was William Thompson. This is where the term comes from. An American criminal in the late 1840s in New York, he would dress nice, walk up to, this is crazy, walk up to an upper-class person he called the Mark. He would pretend to know them and then would ask if they had confidence in him for them to give them their watch. Then he would take it and run. I mean, sure, do I know you? You know me. You know me. Look, you know me. Give me your watch and I'll show you. I'll show you. So, sure, here's my watch. Person I'm pretty sure is a stranger. Hey, where are you going? Yeah. It just seems kind of silly, but, 1840s. I don't know how savvy everybody was. I don't, just seems like, you would, a really good comp, that's the whole thing about the confidence, right? Is they can con you because they know psychology. They know about people. And that was what he said, Thompson said, was knowing that person as far as, the type of person they are and being able to persuade them. Conning is all about persuasion, right? Getting that confidence. So let's talk about our confidence woman today. Sophia Ivanova, or Sonia the Golden Hand. So we're going to call her Sonia through most of this. We've had lots of Sophias on on this podcast, so it's kind of nice to call her maybe something different like Sonia. So Sonia the Golden Hand, she was born in 1846 during the height of the Russian Empire. Not much is known about her early life. Really, not much is known about her personally at all. But she was born in Warsaw, Poland, which Poland had become part of the Russian Empire in 1831 after the Polish-Russian War. Her birth name was Shindelsura Libanova Solomoniak. She was Jewish and her parents were poor merchants. She was highly intelligent and learned to speak several languages like Polish, German, Russian, and Yiddish. And she was married several times and had a few kids, but it's not about them. A few words about the Russian Empire, though. I am not going to go into the history of the Russian Empire, so don't panic. It's crazy long, and it's really interesting, though. I don't know, for whatever reason, I'm always interested in the Russian Empire, especially when it, you know, starts with Peter the Great, because he kind of starts the Romanovs. But during Sophia's lifetime, 1846 to 1902, the Russian Empire had several rulers and controlled a decent amount of territory. During her lifetime, Russia had four czars, actually, and the last one being Nicholas II, who was brutally killed in 1917, which is after Sophia's death. But Nicholas II is the one that most people know besides Peter the Great or Catherine the Great. Nicholas II and his family, you know, the whole Anastasia fable and all that kind of stuff. And I say fable because it's a myth, and not fable, sorry, myth. Anyway, so back to Sonia. Her career as a thief began early when she would commit petty thefts at local stores, and she was kicked out of school for stealing books. But her later crimes were considered masterful. But before we get into those, I want to talk about some of the legends about her. Again, it's really hard to verify some of these things, but these are the legends. She was a master of disguise and would dress fancy, stay at expensive hotels, and sneak into upper-class people's hotel rooms to steal things. She supposedly stole exclusively from the rich, which created like a Robin Hood type legend of her, especially since it was rumored that she would give things away to that, you know, things that she stole away to the poor often. Like she would find an old lady on the street and would give her jewels or whatever. The public loved her and would often help protect her from the police. It was said she ran the largest gang of thieves in St. Petersburg. Another legend says she wore fake fingernails where she could hide cash and, you know, small jewels, and that she had a trained monkey that would swallow valuables for her. Gross on getting those back. She would also dress as a male peddler to not be recognized. But most of these legends could not be verified, of course, but it doesn't mean that some of them aren't true. I'm pretty sure she probably was a master of disguise. You know, that kind of thing is you know, common for con. People, let's call them con people, confidence men and or women. So that one was probably pretty accurate. But yeah, some of the monkey, probably not. The fingernails, probably not. Maybe still going into hotel rooms, probably. I could see that happening. But there are about three crimes here that I was able to verify that she became famous for. First was a robbed jeweler. This in May of 1883. A beautiful, well-dressed young lady entered the Von Mell jewelry store and introduced herself as the wife of a well-known psychiatrist. She had expensive tastes and selected a variety of items worth 30,000 rubles. She asked for the jewelry to be hand-delivered by the owner to her home address, where her rich husband would pay for the items. At the appointed time, the jeweler and the collection of diamonds arrived at the doctor's residence. The beautiful wife met him at the door and took the box of jewels, explained that she wished to wear them that night. She invited him in to wait in her husband's office. Later, the doctor arrived at the office and asked the jeweler what he wanted. The jeweler complimented the psychiatrist on his beautiful wife and her expensive taste, then asked to be paid, of course. The psychiatrist thought he was having an episode and called orderlies to come get the jeweler and take him to the mental hospital. Later on, it was found out that the lady arrived at the doctor's house before the jeweler was to arrive. Like, she'd arrived like a day or two before or whatever. I'm not really sure the time frame, but she told the doctor that she was the wife of the jeweler at the Von Mell jewelry store, and that he had gone crazy over buying these diamonds and stuff. So she gave the psychiatrist money up front so that way he could treat her husband in the psychiatric hospital. So here's the question about this, though. So how was it that she was able to answer the door? Now, did she break in later, or did she never leave? Like, you know, that she said, okay, bye, and then just actually never left the house. Or, I don't know. I don't know how that would work. I guess that's part of the con, right? But this was a verifiable story. I couldn't, again, verify all the details, but this was verifiable in several different sources. Same way with this next one. And this one kind of definitely makes this one's kind of easy. In October of 1884, the banker, Dr. Dagmarov, was at Cafe Fanconi in Odessa when he noticed, that's not Texas, that's Russia, of course, when he noticed a beautiful woman who said she was Mrs. Sophia Sendonato. They had a pleasant conversation, and she asked him to change a 1,000 rubles bill. She told the banker that she was leaving for Moscow by the evening train. So was he. So they decided to share, you know, a car, I guess a sleeping car, platonically, of course. But after having a wonderful night of conversation and eating chocolates and stuff, he woke up and the girl was gone, and so was 43,000 rubles. So, easy robbery. The third robbery that I was able to verify, August 1885, a Courland baroness, Sophia Buxhovden, ordered a collection of adornments for 22,300 rubles. When she came to pick them up, she said she forgot her money at home. She took the jewelry and left, but left behind collateral. She left behind some relatives, a gray-haired man, a governess, and a baby girl. And then she promised that she would, you know, come back with the money and then get her relatives. Well, 2 hours goes by, no woman, right? And those people are just kind of standing around at this jewelry store. So the jeweler called the cops. Come to find out, they, of course, were not relatives of the beautiful woman. She had hired them off the street. Eventually, she was captured, though. Many times, actually, she was brilliant at escaping from prison. And I find that kind of fascinating, too. She was sent to Smolensk. As an example, she was sent to Smolensk and escaped with the help of a male warden who left with her. Now, what happened to him, who knows? But at first, you know, he left with her, probably promised all kinds of cool stuff. She was eventually exiled, though, to Sakhalin penal colony, although she escaped that a couple times, too, but eventually that's about where it ended. It's a famous Siberian penal colony. You know, people talk about, you know, going off to Siberia. It's on Russia's largest island in the northeast coast between Kamchatka Peninsula in the north and the Japanese islands in the south. It's pretty way up there. Russia had decided to create a colony out there, force a colony, actually, using exiles, prisoners, dissenters, kind of very similar to Great Britain and Australia. Sakhalin was originally inhabited by indigenous tribes like the Ainu, Orok, Gilyak, and Nivka. I think I'm saying that correctly. None of this, obviously, I'm saying correctly, but I'm doing as best I can. At that time, at the time that Sonia was there, there were only about 10,000 non-indigenous inhabitants. And it was awful. It was a terrible place. Very few hospitals, if any, in areas. People lived in one-room shacks with, like, no furniture, slept on the hard ground. The climate there is just disgusting. You know, it's all damp and rainy all the time. It never gets warm. There's only 8 days of sunshine in the summer. It's just, it's awful. And the criminals were sent there to do hard labor in the mines. There's one or two mines there. And these were kind of templates for gulags from the USSR, you know, where they would send people to forced labor camps, basically, and that's where they died. The prisons were awful. They mold on the walls, filth in the corners, like human filth in the corners, as well as, you know, dead animals and live animals, which is worse than dead animals. Like rats and stuff. Most women prisoners that were sent there never left. They left the prison, but they went right to the brothel because that was the only work, really, for a woman. And getting back to where you came from, Moscow or wherever in the Russian Empire, was really expensive, and you had to pay that on your own. They didn't just, like, you know, okay, you're done. Now get on the Trans-Siberian Railroad and head back to Moscow. The Russian playwright Anton Chekhov had actually visited the penal colony. It took him a long time to get there. It took him like 3 months, and he stayed 3 months. Had tuberculosis, so it was not good for him anyway. But he actually saw Sonia. She is mentioned in his book about Sakhalin prison. He writes in his book that when he saw her, she was in solitary confinement with arms and legs shackled, probably to keep her from escaping, right? He described her as, quote, a small, skinny, already graying woman with a crumpled old womanish face, end quote. She was in her mid-40s at the time. So that's kind of sad there, too. I could not find how she died. Who knows? I mean, could be tuberculosis, could be anything if she's in that prison. But her body disappeared after death, but it's supposedly buried in an unmarked grave in Moscow. There's a headless statue in Vagankovo Cemetery, sorry, that is used as a shrine to her by thieves and other criminals. There are TV, and the picture will be on the website. Anyway, with a picture of her, she's actually really pretty, hence the beautiful woman, right? There are TV shows about her as well as books and movies. Actually, a TV show like just only like maybe 10 years ago, I want to say. Not US, of course, but you know. I wish there's more information about her, honestly, about her exploits, you know, which parts are true and which parts are actually legend. You know, for whatever reason, I'm very interested in, you know, confidence crimes. I know that seems weird. And bank robbery, which is why, like, not the originals, but the George Clooney versions of, like, the Ocean's movies fascinate me. Just the cleverness of it, the con artistry, disguises, you know, ripping off a huge casino to me is really awesome because, you know, they are what they are. Anyway, she seems like a fascinating person, but most of what I found was just not verifiable, but, you know, hence the legends. But Sonia Goldenhand, a woman committing crimes, for sure. Thank you for listening. Podcast is brought to you by the podcast This Is Why You're Wrong with Stephen Everett, Dawn DeBruin, and Alex Alcantar. In their podcast, they make lists about everything from top 10 cereals to top 10 string instruments. That's the latest ones. Then they argue about why their list is superior. It's an inspiration for this podcast with their episode on the top 10 coolest bad guys. That was a lot of fun. I was actually on that episode. Check it out on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts and compare your list to theirs. I want to thank Byron Alexander for letting me use his music at the beginning and end of the podcast. The song at the beginning is the instrumental version of Very Well I Know, and the song at the end is Who. Both songs are on his fantastic album, Square One. You can find it on Amazon, Spotify, iTunes, YouTube, anywhere you find and buy music. It's a great album. Speaking of music, I was going to add some to this like I did the last two episodes, but honestly, I'm exhausted and I forgot. Even though I have it queued up. I'm not going to go back and re-record this, so I promise you, after this episode, everything will get so much better, especially for you, Ty-Ty Claire. I'm going to try to make this definitely, I'm going to make this better. I just, again, I've been exhausted. The last 2-3 weeks have been crazy. Anyway, let's see, where was I? I want to thank my husband, Doug, who designed the logos for this podcast, as well as the podcast Off Kilter No Filter. Off Kilter No Filter is a podcast with me and Byron Alexander, where we discuss really anything and everything. Our latest episode will be uploaded this Thursday, and we're going to talk about food. You know, cooking food or not cooking food. Like the last 2 weeks, I haven't had a kitchen, so, because it's been part of an escape room. So I haven't been able to cook, and it's been weird eating out so much, and I'm really not, I don't know. Anyway, so this next week will be about food. Come listen on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and any other podcast you use. And make sure to give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Favorite us on Anchor or whatever, you know, rating systems they have on all the different podcasting things. Give us the best ratings that you can, please. But also be honest. I do like the honesty. I do want the feedback. I've only had, you know, Ty-Ty Claire and several others, you know, that did like it. But yeah, I want something. And I'll read it on the podcast if you like. If you don't, that's fine too. You know, email me at womencommittingcrimes@gmail.com or comment on the website, womencommittingcrimes.com, or on Twitter. On Twitter, we are at CrimesWomen. And then the Facebook page, the Women Committing Crimes Group. if you would like to support this podcast, go to anchor.fm/Elizabeth-Chase and click the support button. You can make a one-time donation or you can sponsor on a monthly basis. It would be greatly appreciated. Please, please, please give this podcast 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. And also listen on iHeartRadio. Give us good ratings on that too. So I know this one's kind of short today, but again, I haven't had as much time as I'd like, but starting actually after today, it should all be good. So let's see. Who's in the fishbowl for next week? Let's see if there's... Here we go. All right. I got one. Next time I'll have one of my guys do it again. I liked that too. All right. I'm not going to pronounce this correctly, but she's from Puerto Rico. Her name is Lydia Echevarria, plotting to murder her husband. Oh, this looks interesting because she was a television producer in Puerto Rico. Mmm, I love it. All right, so that'll be next week. I'll talk to y'all next week. Y'all be safe. Be happy. Bye.